And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door, just like a Murillo Crossfield ball. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So the only thing left to say is, you win? Only via the app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network.
TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Danilo's free.
First time we've seen them attack them, and there's Brandon!
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Red Side of the Trent during this international break. This week I'm joined by our very own Lee Clark and also by a special guest as we are joined by a fan's favourite from our League One days in Nicky Sarforce. Thank you for coming on, Nicky, and giving us your time. I mean, how are things with yourself?
Not too bad. Just getting on really with stuff after football. Obviously, it's when you're out of football, it's a long time being retired, especially as a player. So just trying to cut my teeth into management itself.
Good. We'll touch on that later. Lee, how are you?
Yeah, all good. Nice seeing the sun shining for a change.
Yeah. Coming into spring and then on to summer, hopefully. Some nice weather. Right, well, we'll get straight into it then. And we'll try and pick your brains, Nicky, from see what you can kind of remember from your days at Forest. I mean, it'll be nice with things a bit negative for us as for Forest as well at the moment to do a bit of reminiscing, etc. So, I mean, your story with Forest began really before joining us because on the last day of the 04-05 season, we had already been relegated by them, but yourself and Gillingham needed a win at the City Ground to stay up. That, unfortunately for you, didn't happen as the game finished 2-2. And I believe Crewe stayed up instead by a single goal. Talk us through that day, and I think you've got two assists that day as well, I believe.
Yeah, obviously it was a game that obviously we knew there was no pressure on obviously Nottingham Forest because they were already relegated. So they had obviously to go into the game with no pressure on at all. But obviously we had the threat of relegation, so... and obviously we had to rely on Crewe as well, but we just went into the game and we just knew that we had to win it, you know, and give ourselves every chance. And unfortunately, we just fell short. I think it was a Eugene Bopp goal, I think.
It was, yeah. It was a really good goal. I remember sitting in the main stand that game because I think Gillingham must have brought about 4,000 or 5,000 fans up, didn't they?
Yeah.
Which was a brilliant support. So yeah.
No, it was a day, like I say, for myself. I just wanted to give everything for the badge, like I always do for every club I've been at. And unfortunately, we couldn't stay up on that day. And I think with the way obviously I played and stuff, after the game, I went away to Cyprus, funny enough, on a holiday just to recharge the batteries. And I got a call from Gary Megson when I was in the gym. In a hotel in Cyprus, and he said, "Would you be interested in joining us?" And I was like, "I couldn't believe it." You know, I was like, especially a massive club like Nottingham Forest. I've always followed them anyhow because I know Brian Clough at the time, he's from Middlesbrough area and Hartlepool, so it was sort of, I always looked at that club in that way.
I guess just touching on that as well then, was it always in your mind that you would leave Gillingham? And I guess the question, without being too, putting a negative spin on it, is did you anticipate that a club the size of Forest would kind of come in?
No, I didn't really. Like I say, I was at an age where I was in mid-30s, 32, I think, 33, and to get a call to go to a club like Nottingham Forest. And funny enough, it happened a few years before when I went to play for Bolton in the Premier League. I was 29 at the time. So I think my level of football at the time was really consistent. I played a lot of games that could play in a number of positions. And I just think managers sort of like that influence, or even that kind of a player that you know what you're going to get from.
I mean, that leads us on to the man who signed you for Forest. And I mean, I've listened to plenty of different podcasts from plenty of players from that era about a certain Gary Megson. I mean, what was your thoughts on him early doors at Forest?
He was obviously... He's very strong-minded. He had his own ways of playing football, and it got him a lot of success when he was at West Brom. I think it wasn't the flowing football that everyone wanted to see, and it's the Forest way, isn't it? To play that flowing football, and it always has done. And I just think fans just got a little bit frustrated. We didn't get the results that we wanted, even though we started quite well in the first few games of that season. And I just think he fell out with a few of the players. I think he fell out with David Johnson at the time and Marlon King. So there's a few, I think it was Rogers as well, Alan Rogers. So there's a little bit,
I don't know.
Yeah, there was a little bit of bad feeling towards the manager. But like I say, he just signed me, so it's sort of difficult. The manager just signed me, so I was only new to the club, and I had to give him every chance. And I just went about my business, didn't get involved with anything off the field with what was going on. I just had to concentrate on myself and for my family.
I think one of the questions I've got to ask you in terms of Megson, while we're on the subject of our former manager, is the defeat at Yeovil away, when obviously the supporters came into the dressing room to give the team talk. I just wonder what you, I mean, in that day and age, in this day and age, should I say, that would, I'd be amazed if that would ever happen. But what was your thought process at the time when you've come off the field, you've just had a defeat like that anyway, and then instead of your manager giving the team talk, you've got two, you know, disgruntled fans? What was the thought process to you sat there after a disappointing defeat?
Obviously, we're really, really good, obviously, with the performance itself, but for two fans just to come through, and you know, the travel far and wide, and they spend a lot of money, the big expectations on us. But I don't think we, as a team at that time, we just didn't manage the expectations, because every ground we went to play at, it was always the biggest crowd of the season. It was more or less a carnival atmosphere. I remember before that game, there was, I think, parachuters dropping onto the pitch and stuff, what was going on. So there was a lot of stuff going, like you say, on and off the pitch. And listen, they came in the dressing room, they had a bit of a rant, which, you know, I've never seen it before, and I don't think it ever would happen again. But he wanted maybe to take a little bit of heat off himself at the time by doing that. I think the boys, when they did come in the dressing room, we actually had to sit there, and we took it. And for a period, like I said, we took it on board, and then all of a sudden it started to get a bit nasty, and the boys started to resent it, and then obviously we got the fans out of the dressing room. Obviously we let them have the say, but then obviously it started to get a little bit personal. And once that happened, I think the boys had basically had enough, and they wanted the fans out of the dressing room then.
Right. I mean, yeah, as you say, I mean, that season under Megson was a bit of a disaster until he obviously was sacked, because you know, the cups for us. We went out to League to Accrington in the League Cup. We went out to Woking then in the conference in the then LDV Vans Trophy. And, you know, was took to a replay by non-league side Weymouth before losing in the next round to League Two side then Chester. I mean, them results plus, like I say, a poor league campaign saw Megson finally get the chop. I think it was a 3-0 defeat at Oldham, if I remember correctly. I might be wrong there, but finally finished it. I mean, was that a relief for the end in the for the players that he did get the bullet?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's not nice anyone getting sacked because obviously, you know, as a squad and as a player, you haven't been performing. But it's so almost with him leaving and Charlie and Frank came in and took over. It was almost like, yeah, go out and relax and just go and play for the badge. There's no pressure on you. Whatever manager comes in, go and impress the next manager. So it almost just felt as if like the shackles were off a little bit. I don't know if you can remember, like Gary Megson stood on the touchline and he never stopped shouting all game. And as a player, you almost was too busy just looking at the managers, hearing what he was saying. And it got quite distracting and quite personal at times. So with him leaving, obviously there's players who weren't in the squad came back in, which Charlie and Frank brought back in. I think David Johnson came back in at the time and stuff. So it's almost give us a new lease of life and just to go out and express yourself without that pressure of Gary Megson on that sideline.
I mean, you would have took the brunt of that, wouldn't you? Because you obviously would have played a half on the right midfield.
Yeah.
So it would have been in your ear for a half.
Yeah, there was. It becomes a time. And I ended up, like, so he signed me and I ended up like having a bite back on the pitch because I just wanted to concentrate on the ball. I didn't want to be coached from a manager on the pitch. I'm experienced enough. I understand my roles and responsibilities. I want to make them decisions myself without the manager telling me, constantly dictating what was happening. So it almost felt as if he was playing a game but was stood on the touchline. I don't think he ever did that transition from a player to a manager very well.
I think as a pro, obviously, you always give your all, regardless of who the manager is. But I think with someone like Megson, is his approach a bit, does it eventually just wear you down? You mentioned how McParland and Barlow just basically, you know, let the shackles off, told you to relax and enjoy your football again. Is it basically just a case of Gary Megson's management style and his persona to the players can only take you so far because it just wears you down on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, exactly. And that's exactly how it was. I just think it just went too far. He was a very passionate man, don't get me wrong, Gary Megson. He was very, very vocal, very passionate. But I think you've got to trust them players once they step across that white line to go out and implement everything that you've worked on through the week in training. Not everything's going to come off, but you want players expressing themselves, trying things. And I think it got to a stage where players were even scared to even try passes, try skills, or try even shooting a goal. You know, it just become so, how can I say it? So stale in terms of what was on the pitch, and he just brought that across from the touchline.
I just always felt like it come across as a weird notion because I think that squad at the time was kind of brimming with lots of talented players. And I get at some clubs he's managed. I think when he went into Wednesday, it was kind of the sort of squad that maybe needed that approach. But I just always found it strange at Forest how Megson didn't work because obviously he'd worked for him at other clubs. But no, it's interesting you say that, to be fair.
Yeah. Well, it's like, so you've got to understand we were a group of players that have come from different clubs, different leagues. And, you know, the Forest way has always been the Forest way, bringing through very talented youth players coming through, always like production line coming through. So I think there was a lot of pressure, especially with Forest being in League One. I think we were obviously always the favourites to get promotion. So there was a lot of pressure maybe on Gary himself behind the scenes maybe. And I just think he brought that pressure maybe onto the players a little bit too much. And I just didn't think that we could go out and express ourselves and play in that free flowing way. When it did click, it clicked, you know, there was times that it did click. But I just think overall, I think he just gotten too many players' backs, and eventually I think the players just went into the shelves and didn't perform.
I mean, speaking about Charlie and Frank's reign, which was a short one, but a very enjoyable one because we started to win most weeks. I mean, the standout game under them was the 7-1 home win against Swindon, in which you scored a hat-trick. Talk us through your memories of that day.
Yeah, it was an unbelievable day for me personally. I always remember waking up and my middle daughter, she actually predicted the score. She said we'd win 7-1. And honestly, to this day, I'll never know how she done it, but she predicted the score. And I lived out at Rufford, just right next to Centre Park. So my house used to back on Centre Park, so I had a fair drive into the game. And obviously, when you're driving in, you've got a lot of thoughts of the game running through. You've got to think about the position, who you're marking, and everything going through the game. And just as a player, I think probably once in your whole career, I mean, I had a long career, that practically everything seemed to click for me and worked out. Every pass, every cross, every set piece just seemed to, one of them games where it all came together as a player, which, like I say, you generally only ever get probably one of those games in your whole career where everything was spot on, you know. So, but the goals itself, yeah, I remember the first goal, it just dropped kindly. I think it was a great strike, I think. It was from Julian Bennett, wasn't it, with his left foot?
Yeah, I think it was, yeah.
I mean, he had absolute wonderful left foot. You could strike a great ball. And I think it was an outside of his foot from about 30 yards. I've never seen anybody try that before, but it kind of back off the crossbar. And luckily enough, it came down to me, and it's obviously connected sweetly, and it went into the top corner. I think the second goal, I think it was a good run down the left. I think, was it John Curtis? Just holding it up back stiff, and I came in and headed it. And the third one was Nathan Tyson. You know, he was always a threat, Nathan. He played on shoulders, and he had that electric pace. And he's got through on that left-hand side, and I just took a gamble, and obviously I couldn't get probably an easier finishing goal to score for your hat-trick.
Yeah, the season after, on the last day when we went up, Julian Bennett scored a goal with the outside of his foot to help us get promoted from about 25 yards after crunching somebody. It's a bit of one of them goals in Forest folklore, that one.
Honestly, he had an unbelievable left foot, and just to even try it from 30 yards, you just wouldn't get that power generally. But
yeah,
you obviously had it in this left foot.
I think thinking about that particular performance as well, and obviously the run to the end of the season, I think we just missed out on the playoffs, if I remember rightly. Obviously, I'm getting on a bit now, but I think we played Bradford on the last day, and we needed to win and hope the results went our way, and we ended up with a 1-1 draw. As a bunch of players, did you look back on that with a bit of disappointment because you'd missed out on the playoffs, or did you kind of see it as a almost like a mini success because of where you were when Megson had departed?
Yeah, obviously we wanted to finish strongly and try and get into the playoffs, and it just clearly shown us that if the shackles were off a little bit earlier, I think we would have got into the playoffs, and hopefully that momentum would have got us promotion for the playoffs. But we finished on a high, and we honestly couldn't wait for the season to start next year, because we could see clearly that with the few players that was coming in under Colin Calderwood, we thought we'd have a great chance the next year.
I mean, was you surprised that Charlie and Frank didn't get the job full time? And I mean, what were your thoughts on the boss, obviously the new boss, Colin Calderwood?
Honestly, personally, I would have loved them to have kept the job. I thought they had a real good vibe going. They had a good connection with the fans. The fans really took them on board. Charlie's so infectious, you know. He's just great around the dressing room. His personality was wonderful, you know, and he made everyone relaxed. And you wanted to go out there and fight for him. And I just think if it would have come a little bit sooner with the second of Gary Megson, I think we would have definitely got into the playoffs. And obviously, they didn't get the job, which is unfortunate. But obviously, Colin Calder would come in, and he got his own staff in, and unfortunately, thanks. But for me personally, I would have loved them to have stayed, and I just think they would have definitely have reached the playoffs.
I think one thing that was kind of evident the following season was we vastly improved in the cup competitions. We beat Charlton, who were in the Premier League at the time, at home. And then we obviously got Chelsea away. And Jose Mourinho showed no mercy and played an absolute side. It was when Chelsea had just got all their money, I think, wasn't it? He played pretty much everyone.
That was the last game for Forest.
Right. Okay, yeah. I was just wondering, kind of, when obviously you beat Charlton anyway, and then you go and get a draw like that. What was it kind of like to test yourself against that type of opposition? And I guess the one thing I've always wanted to ask someone about that day was, I think Grant Holt played left wing that day. I just wonder, as a group of players, when you see, obviously Grant Holt was so good as a forward, when you see that sort of decision from the manager, do you kind of think that there must be some sort of rhyme and reason behind it, or as a group of players, do you kind of look at it and think, why is he doing that?
The result against Charlton was a great result, and I remember the goal, I think I crossed it for Grant, it was an A-post header, wasn't it? And we fully deserved that win, and to go to Chelsea, I just think it's a one-off game where there's no pressure on us to win. We just had to go there and try and put performance. He did show no mercy because he's probably his strongest team out. I think Drogba got a hat-trick, wasn't it, at the time? But yeah, Grant played out on that left. I think it was sole purpose to try and hit him on a dire, because Grant was really good at coming back across, especially fullbacks, heading it inside to more pace for runners from midfield. So it wasn't just thrown out there, we put Grant out of position. It was done because we see a weakness in Chelsea's fullback areas where Grant could maybe pull on them fullbacks.
I mean, I've just had a quick look. Actually, the front three that day, it wasn't really a tweak, I guess. The front three from Forest was, we played Holt, Tyson, and Agogo that day. I mean, yeah. Chelsea did kind of trump us by playing Drogba and Shevchenko as a pair, but you know, I guess now you've explained that
doesn't make sense.
I know.
Not bad, is it? I'm just looking at their team now. Like Lampard played, they had Wright, Phillips, SCS.
Yeah, that's options as well.
Oh, did you? Oh, lovely. So yeah, not a bad side from Mourinho. I mean, as you said, it was in my notes, that Chelsea game was actually your last for Forest. You returned to Gillingham in the January after 18 months of us. I mean, how come that move happened? Was there a chance to stay with Forest at all?
Actually, I didn't want to leave. I remember the whole scenario. It was, we were up in Carlisle, I think, the game after. And we were in Carlisle overnight, and I was having pre-match dinner with the boys, and the phone call came through about Gillingham want me to sign. I was coming out with a contract, and Nottingham Forest had offered me 1 year extension, but I wanted a 2 year. I just moved into my house. It took me a while to move in my house up in Rufford, and I thought, just give me another year. The policy was that they wouldn't give anyone who was, I think, 34, 35 year old, 2 year contracts. And my agent spoke to the club, and they wouldn't move on that stance. And in the meantime, Gillingham had come in and offered me a 2.5 year contract. I still had my house rented out in Kent. So obviously my children were born there, but I actually didn't want to. I was probably playing the best football of my career, and I loved the club, I loved the fans. Just speaking about it now, you know, walking out at the City Ground, it's like, couldn't believe it, you know. My age as well, I had to pinch myself at times, and I was good at that. It all turned around, and I didn't want to, so I had to leave the hotel at in Carlisle and get down to Gillingham before the deadline to sign.
Oof, that's a drive half.
It took me 2 days. My brother My brother lives in Wigan, so I had to get a train to Wigan from Carlisle, stay there overnight, and then I had to travel down from Wigan to Kent the next day, so to sign. Yeah, so I was really good, to be honest. I didn't really want to leave. Like I said, I was probably playing the best football of my career at the time and most consistent. And I think you could see that with the reaction I used to get from the fans.
I think just touching on that then, is it one of those situations where obviously it's natural you're going to ask for a two-year cut, but did you almost wish you'd just gone, okay, then I'll just take the 1 year and assess things in a year? Gillingham just strikes me as the sort of club that you could have probably gone back there whenever.
Yeah.
Obviously, your rapport with the people there.
Yeah, in hindsight, I probably wish I'd have maybe just accepted that one-year contract, but I just wanted a bit more security. I think I hadn't missed a game. I think I got injured actually away at Bristol City when the goalkeeper landed on my shoulder, but then I came back relatively quickly and ended up scoring the winning goal against Yeovil at home, I think it was, later on in the game, with a little header back stick. But yeah, maybe I was being a bit more selfish. I was thinking about my family more, and like I say, I just moved into my house in Rufford. I thought, well, it gives me at least a couple of years to stay there and see. I wanted to get to know the area even more, you know. I moved that way because I'm a Middlesbrough boy and it was easier for me to get onto the A1 back up to Middlesbrough from there. So instead of like travelling out of, I did look at Westbridge for the area. I had friends there, still got friends there now. So I just thought it would be easier for myself and my family to go and visit my parents if we moved out to Rufford way to get into that A1.
Nice. I mean, just fast forwarding now to kind of what you're up to these days. I believe you're in charge of a club called Lordswood, who are in the ninth tier based near Gillingham. 3-2 injury time win yesterday, from what I understand, putting my non-league knowledge to the test there, admittedly. I just wondered how you were finding it in management. Is it something that you want to kind of get into higher up the pyramid, or is it something you're happy doing on a lower scale?
Yeah, obviously I want to get back into the league. You know, I was first team coach at Gillingham in League One, and I've been assistant manager at Dover for 3 or 4 years in the National League. Got promotion with Maidstone for 2-3 years under Jay Saunders. We had a good spell there, got them into the National League. So once you're out of the limelight, it's hard to get back in. There's so many people scrapping around and wanting jobs, coaching jobs, managers' jobs. So obviously Lordswood came up. I knew the director of football there. I've worked with him before, Jason Lillis. He's an ex-player at Gillingham as well. So it sort of ticked many boxes. And obviously there's nothing worse than getting up on a Saturday morning and watching the football results come in, and you just want to be at a game and be on that touchline. When you've been involved with football for the years I have been involved in, it's like the routine of getting up on a Saturday morning looking forward to a game, it gone, and it sort of was starting to affect my mental health at times. I thought, you know what, I just need to get back into football. So I ended up taking this role and I'm really enjoying it.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
I mean, speaking of your time at Dover, I watched the Copper 90 documentary on Dover when you was a coach, because I've got a friend who works for them. I mean, how much of a difficult time was that? Because was it a year without a win, a calendar year without a win? I mean, and what experience did you take from Andy S and Tyler into management today, if any?
Yeah, obviously, Andy was a tenacious player on the pitch. We all know that. And we were best mates on and off the pitch. So to take that role and work alongside him, and I really enjoyed it. But that year at Dover was something I had. Obviously, it was the COVID era. We ended up, the chairman at Dover at the time, he pulled us out of the league for his reasons unknown to us still. He's saying basically because nobody could get relegated or promoted, so he pulled us out of the league, stopped us playing, put us all on furlough. And then at the end of the new season, after that, the hit us with the 12 points and a £40,000 deduction. So we were on the back foot, you know, in that National League, there's some big clubs. Like you say, we had Yeovil in there, we were playing, we got promoted to the Championship. We've got Yeovil, we've got Chesterfields, we've got Hartlepool United, all these Wrexhams. These clubs have got unlimited budgets. Notts County, we ended up playing them first game of the season. We actually won the first game of the season against them 1-0. So to start the season on -12, and the chairman ended up cutting the budgets half the budget from where it was the previous season. We were just fighting hailstorms, and there's no way we could recover from it.
Yeah, just looking at Dover, because they look like they're going to get relegated again from the National South, aren't they? So, which ironically, Yeovil are top of that league. So,
in the National League South, Yeovil are in the Championship.
Scunthorpe being another at the North level, you know. I remember them being in the Championship with us and beating Newcastle, and it's crazy how some teams just fall by the wayside, I must say. Mm.
I think just must be mismanaged or whatever. But at the time, like I say, we just couldn't compete. The budget just was nowhere near the kind of budget. We had to go into the youth team, and we ended up playing 17, 18-year-old players who've had no experience whatsoever. In many ways, it did the club a favour, because some of the kids that came through were really good and ended up getting moves. But I think, looking back, the chairman at Dover at the time, he should have just ended up playing the youth team, even if he wanted to put all the first team players on furlough. He still should have completed the fixtures like other teams did.
I think just switching back to Forest a little bit, I think having spoke to you for the last half an hour, I know the answer to this one already, but do you still keep your eye out for the Forest results today? And if so, like, how pleased are you to see the club back in the Premier League? And I guess the $1 million question is like a triple whammy is, do you think we'll stay up?
Yeah. Yeah, listen, I follow all the clubs that I used to play for, and I have a massive affection for Nottingham Forest, and I look out for them all the time. I was looking at the fixtures they've got coming up, you know, they've got some teams around them that really are six pointers. Is it Crystal Palace next, which is a massive game? Got Fulham, Sheffield United, got Everton. So we've got a lot of teams. So if you look at the running, really, they've probably got, well, people say the hardest running because they're playing teams down there. But if you look at it, there's points to be taken there, you know, definitely in the running. It doesn't help, obviously, having a -4 points deduction. But they did incredible under Cooper to get promotion. And nobody see that coming from where they were, and to get to the playoffs and win the playoffs was just unbelievable. And I feel sorry in many ways with him leaving, because I think he was the right fit. Even though the results didn't quite go that. The Premier League, again, is another one. It's unforgiving. You just got to ride the storm at times. You know you're not going to... There's going to be periods where you're going to have 5, 6, 7 matches where you ain't going to win, because it just is. The quality of the teams in that league, you ain't going to win them. But then if you can put a little run together against teams around you, Because that's what we used to do with Bolton. When I was at Bolton with Big Sam, he'd identify all the teams that would be in there or thereabouts at the end of the season, and they were the games that he really focused his attention on more. We went to the likes of Arsenal and Man United, and it was a bit of a free hit. There was no expectation as to win them games, but the big games are the teams that he identified that would be there or thereabouts near the end of the season, down below halfway of the league, you know. And I hope they do stay up. I'd love them to stay up, and because they've been so long out of that league, and I'll be obviously following like every other ex-player probably, and every other fan of, because I class myself as a fan of Nottingham Forest now.
Just on this season, just one other question I wanted to ask as well was, our biggest vice this season has been defending and attacking set pieces, to be honest. Now, when you played, we were actually pretty good at set pieces. I think Brecken was our top scorer one season.
Yeah.
I mean, was that something that, even when you were playing, was that something that you'd spend sort of half an hour every day working on in training? I'm guessing it is, because Brecken was just so... He was always unmarked. It was just, like, ridiculous. It was every game you could see it coming.
Yeah, well, me and Brex, we were probably best mates off the pitch, and we sort of knew each other's games inside out. I knew where he would run, and his the way he used to attack, is the timing. I used to go off a three step corner or a free kick routine, so I sort of, he knew that as well. So he would make his run off my three steps, and I'm going to attack the areas where I generally used to practice them. Don't get me wrong, I used to stay back for at least a good hour, two or three times a week, training, just hitting balls, just honing my technique to put balls in areas that is going to be consistent for the likes of Brex and Wes Morgan to go and attack.
Before we let you go, I'm just going to give you two quick fire questions, which is, the first is your favourite Forest goal, and also the best player you played with at Forest.
Favourite Forest goal? Well, obviously the first one I scored in my hat trick was a good goal, but I think I'm going to have to say the Bristol City free kick.
That's the one I put down. Remember that game?
Yeah.
So the kind of famous thing about that game was the Bristol City fans absolutely smashed the pub up to bits.
Yeah, I remember coming up
City Ground. Yeah,
yeah, chairs in the middle of the road and God knows what else. I couldn't believe it. best player to play with at Forest. I mean, there's so many good players, and God, no, yeah, I don't know where to start. I mean, look at Wes Morgan's went on and won the bloody Premier League, you know. So, but, again, like I say, me and Ian Brecken got on really well, but I've got to say I got on really well with Chris Collins as well. He had an unbelievable left foot and my right foot. We had a real good player in there somewhere. But yeah, I mean, Grant Ault, Nathan Tyson, Junior Ogogo, sadly, obviously. It's too many. John Curtis, you know, it's like being from Man United. Well, I've got to say, probably, like I say, Chris Commons, and we used to play golf together as well, so we sort of had that connection as well.
People enjoy, our fans will enjoy that scene as he went to Derby from us, which did go down very well.
I've gotten really well with Gary Ault as well, to be fair.
It's funny though, I was thinking who you'd say for the answer to that, and I was looking at the players you played with, and sort of, I half anticipated Wes Morgan because of what he's done, but then I thought, in terms of just technical ability on a football pitch, I know he went to Derby, but Chris Commons was unplayable at times, wasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, listen, like, players go to different clubs and whatever. I mean, he ended up being a legend at Celtic, didn't he?
Playing in the Champions League.
Exactly. I mean, the talent. He was only young as well when he first came in. Everyone knocked him about his weight. He used to get knocked about his way, but as a talent, dear me, you weren't going to see left foot. It almost reminds me of a little bit like the boy at West Ham came off for England last night.
Bowen.
Jared Bowen.
Yeah, very similar size, and the way he moved with the ball and low centre of gravity. he had that ability to beat players in tight areas. And so he just reminded me totally of him.
Anything else to ask, Lee? Or
no, my other question really was regarding Wes Morgan. And I just thought, obviously, because he came through the academy, because obviously you saw quite a lot of that, Nicky, I just wondered if you kind of always thought he'd go on to be the player he did eventually become, you know, sort of playing 400, 500 times in the Premier League, winning the Premier League, scoring against Atletico in the Champions League, that sort of player. Or did that kind of meteoric rise shock you a little bit?
It sort of shocked me, I knew exactly the kind of boy he is. I mean, for someone of his age, just stepping into the first team, he could read the game really well. He had that sort of sixth sense that we knew where the ball was going to drop. He had really good pace as well. He could cover the ground really well. And to go on and to win the Premier League, especially Leicester, nobody would have thought that. But fair play to him, he's had an unbelievable career. And but he was a great, he was very quiet off the pitch, I've got to say. He wasn't one who was one of the jokers in the dressing room, like David Johnson at the time or Gareth Taylor. You know, he just come in, did his own business and got away, you know, fairly quietly. But fair play to him, he's had an unbelievable career.
Well, I mean, thoroughly enjoyed that. I mean, thank you so much for coming on. We really appreciate you giving us your time. And yeah, good luck with Lordswood for the rest of the campaign. Is he what's kind of like the promotion and that at that level? Are you at that end of the table or?
We're mid-table fighting for playoffs. So we've got 9 games. I've said to the boys, we've got to try and get 20 points out of 9 games. So we got 3 points yesterday, so we've got 17 more. From the next 8 games, so we've got just over 2 points a game to try and get there. We've got the league leaders to play home and away, so we might have a big say, and especially whoever wins that title as well. So yeah, we just got to keep going and doing what we did yesterday, show that kind of spirit, fighting spirit, which hopefully it's starting to show obviously what kind of a character I was as a player. I never say die, I always go to the end, and that's what the players did yesterday.
Yeah, well, thank you again. Thank you for coming on.
Even though the referee was a joke. Don't get me started on a referee.
You're talking to an amateur one here.
Yeah, I'm just trying to work out. Actually, I think the what I'd run my lines on is like the ninth tier, but obviously in the north. I hear it every week. None of us are very good. So yeah.
No,
I've not heard before.
It's not an easy job, I guarantee you that. But I know Forrest have had a rough end of a few VAR decisions recently. I've seen that. Yeah.
We've had it.
Do you agree with VAR at the minute?
It's extremely flawed, isn't it? I think for a game-going fan, it's absolutely abysmal. I think that's in terms of an official, I think I always kind of, I've said on this podcast before, actually, that VAR has made some pretty good officials look absolutely woeful. But yeah, from a fan perspective, it's absolutely rubbish. It almost makes me crave the EFL again, so there isn't VAR.
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd rather have referees make mistakes live on the field. I just don't think they get to referee how they should be refereeing now because of the stress and the worry of being called out if it's a wrong or right decision. For me, I just think the goal line technology should have stayed and the VAR should just go, really, and just let referee on the day naturally how they see it, you know, instead of all this. You can't even celebrate. You're 5-10 minutes to even celebrate. It just baffles me.
I thought it might, you know, when it come in, I thought it would be a good idea for certain things, like, you know, your blatant errors, but they've just overused it. And like Lee said, they've kind of refereeing the game with that rather than it being like an assistance.
Yes.
So they can use it for like clear errors. I mean, how many times have we, we're watching the game and it's like, oh, that's really tight. Just go with the referee's decision on the pitch. And the fact that you can't, as a match going fan, which, you know, us two guys are, the fact you can't hear what's happening, you're literally scrambling around on your phone asking people who aren't at the game, who are watching it on telly, oh, and what's happening. It's, yeah, for the match going fan, it's poor.
Yeah. I mean, I still don't understand the handball rule at the minute. You know, it's just crazy. There's so many different rules in this handball with VAR. And when you look at the way the rugby matches, that's for me how it should be. Everyone knows what's happening in the stands, players on the pitch. The way rugby referees is so much better and more organised, and you just get more respect with what's going on. They're not knowing just, that, of course.
With rugby, they kind of got that respect, haven't they? And the problem with, you know, footballers as well, you know, the media pile on when a referee gets a decision wrong, or there's subjective decisions, and you're starting to get like these screenshots nowadays of like, ah, can you make a decision off a screenshot? It's, yeah. I'm not sure what the
problem is. If you had a bit of dialogue from the referees and they spoke to you back, you'd understand more. It's the way they don't speak to you, and I think you end up getting more wound up as a player, more wound up as a coaching staff. Just talk to people instead of having an attitude where they won't let you know what's going on, and that for me is the whole problem. Is just communication has got to be the way forward between the referees and the players and the coaching staff on the sideline.
Handball's definitely the one for me at our level where they're the hardest sell. I don't know if you noticed it on your games, Nicky, but like it's every time it's only got to touch someone's arm now, and people are screaming that it's the most obvious handball they've ever seen. I think the Premier League and the professional game has kind of created that, because no one naturally knows what constitutes deliberate handball anymore.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, what you have to jump as a defender, or if you're on that football field, you have to jump using your arms, otherwise you're not going to get off the floor. So, like, what is a natural and unnatural position? An unnatural position jumping is with your arms down by your side. A natural position when you jump is where your arms are going up in the air to give you that momentum to lift off the floor. So it's just leaves itself so open to so many wrong decisions, and I just don't believe it. You know, like you have to jump with your hands.
Do you think the standard's
got? If every single player had to jump with his hands by his side, what's going on?
Do you think the standards dropped from when you was playing? Because I listened to, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Under Kosh podcast, but they did one with Jeff Winter.
I know Jeff Winter, he's a Middlesbrough guy.
They did one with Jeff Winter, and he was like, with his decisions, like having some banter back with the players. Now you kind of get the sense it's all a bit too robotic. And, you know, you can't say anything to certain referees, or they just whip, you know, the yellow card out. I mean, so you think like the standards got a lot worse from your day, you say?
Yeah, it has. I mean, football's got the most money it's ever had, ever. Yet the refereeing system has gone back the other way. It's got worse. How can that be when there's so much money in football now? The refereeing bodies, whatever, making up the rules. And they're making it tough for the referees out there, I've got to say. I mean, you're a referee and a linesman yourself, but like they're actually making it harder than what it needs to be. Go and referee naturally and referee with a smile on your face. They look like they don't want to be out there with a fear of making mistakes. Yeah, I'd rather referees make honest mistakes. I had one last week, you know, last Tuesday we were playing top of the league, and there was a foul. One of my players made a foul and they took a quick free kick 15 yards away from where the foul happened. They broke away and scored, you know, and that is, for me, is a mistake, but it's an honest mistake. I will go to them and say, listen, I believe you took the free kick in the wrong place, you've scored from the back of it, but I'd rather have that than stopping play for 5 or 10 minutes just to go back for 5 or 10 yards, misplace with a bit of white line across the ball or whatever they're doing now, you know what I mean? Was it the Ivan Toney one where he moved the ball the other week with the white line? It's like, they make it more complicated. I feel sorry for referees. They're not being allowed to referee in their own natural way.
I think our kind of caveat to it with being a club like Forest in the Premier League, where we are not one of the biggest clubs in the league, is we just feel at times it's just biased towards, like, you know, the top six. Like with the, I'm not sure if you've seen with the Liverpool game where, you know, the referee was actually wrong in law and we had the ball, he gave them the ball back, and fair enough. Yeah, a minute and a half had gone and they scored in, I think, what, the 99th minute, I think, and that caused obviously uproar. And
well, why can't they go back to that? Why can't they go back to that? It was clearly the wrong decision. Why would I don't get
well. I mean, I don't want to dig that back up because I was absolutely gutted at the time. And,
it's same with the Willy Bolly one against Bournemouth. He gets shown a quite clearly incorrect second yellow card, but because it's a yellow card and not a straight red, that can't be checked on VAR.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah, it is ridiculous.
That happened in the 25th minute of the game. If they're trying to say that we're not going to look at yellow cards because they're not key match enough to be checking them, that's if it turns it into a red, surely that's got to be checked. It's just it all needs just ripping up and starting again for me.
Yeah, it does, and it's just got to be simplified. Once it's simplified, I think that's the way forward. They're just making too many rules. They talk about offsides, like with the lines across for the VAR, using the VAR for the offsides. Like you're talking like inches and centimeters. Like, come on, what do you mean? My dear, a forward, if he was level or just whatever, you're onside, it's a goal. You know what I mean? You want to see, at the end of the day, fans want to see goals. They want to see ball going in the back of the net, whether it's for or against. They want to see good goals, good football. Because what's the point of going to watch a game and there's no goals? You want to see the ball hitting the back of the net. And that's what fans pay the money for. To stop it for 1 centimetre onside or offside, like, come on.
I think with how tight everything is at the top and the bottom this year, this year is going to be the year where we see someone robbed of a title or a place in the Premier League because of a toenail or an armpit, I think.
Yeah.
It just feels like it's going that way.
Yeah, and maybe if it does go that way, that could be the deciding factor that they need to rip up the bloody laws and simplify them for everyone. And maybe move forward. We obviously, like you said, there's more money in the game than there's ever been. Let's get it right. Just get it right once, and you don't have to keep repeating it and going back to it. If you're going to do this, VAR, get it right. Not get it wrong.
The way they've implemented it from the start has been, you know, it could have been, in my opinion, something what was useful for the referee, but it's just over-ref the game, and you know, like. They had the opportunity to bring in them semi-automated offsides, which look loads better, rather than using the lines. The Premier League turned, the clubs turned that down. I just don't understand some of the decisions at the time. I really don't.
I had one instance a few weeks ago. I didn't even know if the levels where I'm at Lords were. They have a sin bin, blue card. One of my players had to go off for a blue card. I said, what is that? I didn't even know. Simbin? Well, I've never heard of it.
I think he's made that up.
Yeah. Honestly,
we use a simbin, but we've not had the blue cards come in yet. You can simbin, but you just show a yellow card and point him towards the dugout. You don't. I think he's seen something in the newspaper, and I'd write to the FA.
I can't believe it. What am I saying? A blue card? What was that? Sinbin? Anyway,
thank you so much for coming on, mate. Really, really thankful.
Thanks
for
having
on.
Me, guys.
Yeah, no problem.
Have a good, strong end to the season still.
Yeah, yeah, yourself too, with Lordsworth.
All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers, mate. Cheers. Thank you. Right, that was good, wasn't it? Nice. Yeah, something to do during the international break with us not playing. I mean, that's it for this week's edition. We are not far for an hour, to be fair. I mean, unfortunately, Adam and Christian weren't free today. Otherwise, was going to look into some of our pre-season predictions, but they can wait for another day. Well, for the end of the season now, really. And we was also going to look at doing a quiz and question for you all on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. But we can revisit that another time with it also being close to an hour. I mean, the people who have joined us, the few people, obviously it will be ready to watch after. So if you want something to do during this break, so we hope you've enjoyed it anyway. I mean, I'm sure we'll be having a preview for Palace. I mean, it'll be up to Adam in the week. Obviously, that big game coming on Saturday. So, yeah, fingers crossed we can get the 3 points. So until then, thanks for listening and come on, you Reds.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on McDonald's app at participating restaurants. 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.